Wendy, Representative Copeland in Fairbanks, and also joining us this morning is Senator Frigolitsky of Rhode. The topic of today's discussion is going to be the public hearing on HB 609, an act relating to the debt of the state and agencies and municipalities and providing for an effective date. As part of the interim work of the House Special Committee on State Loans, the committee examined the recent reports to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee by the Government Finance Research Center entitled A Review of Debt Management and Debt Capacity in the State of Alaska. The House Special Committee on Loans held a major hearing in Anchorage at which Wesley Hoff, the manager of the Government Finance Research Center, and the author of the report presented it to the committee. That was during the interim period. The report makes a series of recommendations concerning the state's debt management practices. In addition, the report speaks specifically to the general obligation debt capacity of the state. HB 609 is an attempt to institute many of the report's recommendations for managing state debt. There has been a growing concern on the part of both the legislature and the public with the amount of debt that is being incurred by the state of Alaska. As the state looks to financing many large projects that are important to the state, the capacity of the state to issue general obligation bonds becomes an increasingly important factor. Additionally, a great deal of attention is focused on the debt-issuing entities of the state, the municipalities, the agencies which are authorized to incur debt, and so on. This attention is focused on the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation and the North Slope Borough, which together have issued almost four times the amount of state general obligation debt. While the debt that is incurred by the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation is supported by mortgage revenues, the debt of the North Slope Borough is supported by the property tax revenues of the borough. There remain concerns about the state's ultimate moral obligation. Furthermore, there is an overriding question of at what point the growing debt issuance of AHSCs and the North Slope Borough will negatively impact the overall capacity of the state to issue debt. While HB 609 contains many of the provisions called for by the government's finance research report, it does not provide for some of the more controversial recommendations, such as a ceiling on municipal debt or new provisions controlling the school debt retirement program. It is only a first step towards in which the legislature recognizes the need to maintain an active role in the management of debt issuance of the state, its municipalities, and its agencies. And with that, we have HB 609 before us, and I'm going to start the testimony out with the Speaker of the House from Fairbanks, and I will switch back to Fairbanks at this time. The
Speaker is the general moderator, Representative Ewing. You're referring to Representative Hayes, who's not Fairbanks.
Yes, Speaker Hayes, if you could start with your comments, we'd certainly appreciate it here.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for this opportunity to add some brief testimony in support of the legislation before you today, House Bill 609. As you know, I'm a co-sponsor of the legislation, and I'm also a strong supporter of the goals of the proposal. The state of Alaska is involved in issuing bonds for many activities, from housing loans to industrial development and community improvements. In effect, what this means is that we borrow money over a long term at substantial interest rates and obligate the state to pay it back over time, much as the average person does when borrowing money for a home or an automobile. Over time, Mr. Chairman, these obligations have built up to where the state now pays about $170 million a year in debt retirement. This is in addition to the debt paid by local governments for bonds they issue for local roads, sewers, schools, and community improvements. Retirement of local debt is then paid by either state revenue assistance or local property taxes, both of which fund local government. And just as any prudent person must balance a checkbook and plan a responsible financial program, so must the state, Mr. Chairman, and I believe that cannot continue to rush to the bond market, borrow money for those things we decide we cannot pay cash for. But that's not to say that we shouldn't borrow money. As you know, the state has a very favorable bond rating and they should end that in a good history in terms of repayment of debt. That's what we must assure and what this bill seeks to do, to keep a close watch on that debt and the financial resources it annually demands from the state. The heart of this bill, Mr. Chairman, is the expansion of the duties charged to the State Bond Committee. Basically, it requires an annual report outlining the long-term debt of the state and the effect of that debt on the state's credit rating. That report would also have to outline the debt initiated by entering into long-term leases, as the governor has now proposed for a state office building in Anchorage or a legislative hall in jail. The bond committee would be charged with developing guidelines for management of that debt, including a level of debt that should be incurred. In general, Mr. Chairman, this bill seeks to provide the legislature and the public with a central source of information about our state debt as a management tool. And it makes a great deal of sense to get a handle on this important factor of our annual budget now, rather than to wait until sometime later to discover that our bond rating has been jeopardized or that our annual debt retirement has increased to a point where it becomes unmanageable. I appreciate the chance to support this legislation, and I urge the committee's favorable consideration of it. And thank you, Mr. Chairman, for allowing me to briefly testify in support of this bill today. I am in Fairbanks. I'm testifying by telephone hookup, and at this time, it's necessary that I get off the telephone since I've been on it for about 30 minutes. So again, thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you, Speaker Hayes, and we appreciate your comments certainly appreciate the endorsement on the bill. Hope you have a good trip back to Juneau and that you have a good weekend.
Thank you.
Okay, at this time we're going to start with our testimony here in Anchorage. First, let me just switch back. Are there any comments out there from Fairbanks at this time from Representative Copeland? Make sure he's still there. Do we still have Fairbanks online?
Still online.
Thank you. At this time, we will take a presentation by Wes Huff, the manager of the Government Finance Research Center, and we will take brief comments from him here in Anchorage.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes.
If I could, just one question before we get into it. I think it's an important note. I wonder if we could have an explanation of who is covered by debt issuing entity of the state. Are we talking in that terms of the state, the public corporation such as AHFC, plus municipalities, including boroughs? And just for clarification, I'd appreciate a comment.
Very good. Perhaps Wes could comment on that.
I didn't draft the legislation, so I...
It does cover it, my understanding. Do you want to state your name for the record and appreciate your comment?
This is Wes Huff speaking. I'm the manager of the Government Finance Research Center, which is an operating division of the Municipal Finance Officers Association. I want to thank Representative Ewling for the invitation to speak once again before the House Special Committee on State Loans and commend him for introduction of legislation, which I think makes one step towards implementing some of the recommendations that we made in our report to the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee last fall. I think one of the first things I'd like to address is why we made recommendations to make changes in the state's debt management when it appears to, on the surface, that the state is in very good control of its debt issuance. Its bonds are trading very well. It has a very high credit standing among states, and it's viewed very highly by investors. And the state's present debt burden is what we would consider manageable, and given the present stream of revenues that the state has to pay off the debt. But we feel that this is a, because the state is in such a good position right now, that it's a good opportunity to make some changes in the state's debt management program, which will put it in the best position to manage its debt in the coming years when the revenue stream that the state expects to pay off the debt becomes a little less certain. If the state wishes to continue borrowing it to fund capital investment in the state, it's going to have to make some steps now to ensure that it will have adequate debt capacity in the coming decade. Another reason that we were concerned with the practices, some of the practices of debt management in the state, is the growing use of the moral obligation behind some of the revenue-supported borrowings of the state, and the way that the moral obligation has been given out relatively in a carte blanche manner without attention to the specific project that's being financed using the moral obligation. So we felt that it was a good opportunity for the state to take a look at specific types of bonds that the state pledges its moral obligation to, and to consider now whether or not they wish to continue using the moral obligation in the fashion that they have. The legislation addresses recommendations that we made specifically regarding the role of the State Bond Committee. State Bond Committee, we felt, was the instrumentality of the state, which should be given the responsibility for taking a more global view of debt issuance and debt management in the state, and not to, it was our feeling that in the past, the State Bond Committee had primarily concerned itself only with state debt issuance and not that of the issuing entities of the state. The first step towards expanding the role and responsibilities of the State Bond Committee, we felt, was to broaden its membership. This is important to emphasize the community of interest of debt issuing entities in the state. That the state issues tax exempt bonds, but so do the municipalities, and so do the state agencies. And we believe that the State Bond Committee should recognize that community of interest and the interrelationship of interests by including members on the committee that represent the interests of municipalities and of the debt issuing agencies of the state, in addition to the state itself. Secondly, we recommended that the state develop written debt management criteria. These would be policy guidelines to govern state debt issuance, not only of the state itself, but of all of its agencies. Presently, the process is very informal, and it has worked to satisfaction, but increasingly the public debt market is becoming more and more sophisticated. There are more and more new types of borrowing instruments available, and it's important, I think, that the state, before it uses any of those, that they address all the policy ramifications inherent in obligating yourself to a certain type of borrowing. The type of review that we recommended in the report would require the State Bond Committee to consider the pros and cons of different types of borrowing obligations and as part of its review. This review would also address the use of the moral obligation pledge, and it would be the responsibility of the State Bond Committee to determine whether or not this moral obligation pledge was essential for the particular borrowing to go forth. The review would also encompass affordability criteria, which we recommended the state look to before assessing whether or not it could fund particular capital investments, whether it had the financial capability to afford the debt for the future. This debt management, the guidelines, would also make a distinction between the types of obligations in terms of the nature of payments pledged to pay off the debt. Traditionally, the distinction is made between general obligation bonds and revenue bonds. General obligation bonds are those bonds which the state has pledged its taxing authority to repay. Revenue bonds are bonds which are essentially expected to be paid off by a revenue stream. But increasingly, the distinction is not between general obligation and revenue bonds, but more between tax-supported bonds and non-tax-supported bonds. You can have certain types of revenue-supported bonds, which are indeed tax-supported through lease rental payments or another form of pledge that the state actually is going to be paying them off through tax revenues, although they may not be general obligation bonds. We feel that a more precise description of the type of obligation that the state is entering into would require the State Bond Committee to make the distinction between revenue-supported and tax-supported debt rather than general obligation debt and revenue-supported debt, which is currently the way that the state's financial statements are read. A third area that we addressed was for the state to write annually an annual profile of statewide indebtedness. This would clearly indicate the tax and revenue-supported debt, which is outstanding. It would review debt issuance and debt retirement during the year, and the security pledges behind the various types of debt that's outstanding. Again, this would look through the fact that debt was general obligation or revenue-supported and look to see what it was actually tax-supported. And I think it's important also in that annual profile to distinguish which bonds carry the moral obligation of the state in the event that that moral obligation were ever necessary to be called upon. We also recommended that the State Bond Committee be given a staff to implement the recommendations and to take charge of its increased responsibilities. Finally, we suggested that the state implement what has been implemented in many states down in the lower 48, which is called a bond calendar. This is an annual, semi-annual, or even sometimes it's put out as often as once a month, listing of all the planned debt issuances by all the different entities within the state that are able to issue debt. It would include municipalities, the agencies, and the state itself. This is not a restrictive measure. It only would be an informative one. It would let other issuers know when approximately their colleagues in different parts of the states were planning on issuing bonds. We find that this, at the Municipal Finance Officers Association, that this sort of program helps the very small municipalities who don't have the contacts with the rest of the state that some of the larger entities may have, and it helps them in planning when they want to issue bonds so that they don't come up against one of the larger bond issuers in a competitive transaction. States of California, Virginia, North Carolina are among the few that I'm aware of that have a bond calendar in it. And it is felt by the smaller municipalities to be of great assistance. It's not restrictive. It doesn't require the municipalities to inform the state of any changes that they might have down the line after they submit the calendar. But it provides a base of information for which they can use to plan their debt issuance during the coming year.
Thank you, Wes, for those points. I believe in the bill that we have before us, we're speaking of a calendaring of debt for a fiscal year for an approximate 12-month period. What are your feelings about, I know you talked about a semi-annual calendar or a fiscal calendar for 12 months. What about in the case of where we have a situation where the debt issuing entities of the state change and they may not issue quite as much or may issue less. What kind of a provision would you suggest that could be put into the bill?
What we see is an update. The state of Virginia, for instance, issues an annual financing plan for all of its municipalities and the state itself, listing the approximate month of issuance and the amount of borrowing. That's put out at the beginning of the calendar year in Virginia. Then, as plans change, localities and the state are invited to submit that change in plans to the state finance board, and they then notify all the issuing entities. I do not believe that it's a requirement in the state of Virginia that you make notification of your change in plans. However, it is ascribed to by most of the municipalities because they do see the value of it. So it's a monthly, for local governments that I work for in Virginia, we get a monthly list from the state once a month of the planned debt issuances of the communities.
Thank you, Representative Warden.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. One of them is the way the committee now and recommendations that you're making, the recommendations that this bill make, is that the committee may employ, as I understand it now, may employ staff, section 4, 3715-150 on page 4. And it speaks that the committee may appoint an executive director. I assume that the way we have it now, if there is any advice being put in, it's on a fee basis, which has an inherent ability to commission. Is that the way it is? And
are you referring to the section C? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Section D?
Section 4 on page 4.
As I understand it, the State Bond Committee does not have a staff at the moment.
So they rely completely on people that are going to make a fee off of putting a deal together. Am I correct?
The Department of Revenue has staff which do provide support to the Bond Committee, I believe. The state does have a financial advisor as well who advises them on general matters related to debt issuance and financial management.
I'd like to go into that a little farther, because I got a feeling that a whole lot of this bonding stuff, we're being given advice by people that are going to make a commission or a brokerage fee, whether it be permanent fund, bond counters, or whatever. Somebody's making a lot of money off of this system. I don't know who they are or what they are, but I almost feel that I've always been trying to keep less government and less state employees. But I almost feel that in this particular case, we're going to be far, far ahead to try to keep the foxes away from them.
I think that's, well, I think that what you're saying is that the State Bond Committee should have its own staff in order to give it some independence from and to provide a source of its own information, and I think that's correct. I the type of report that we recommend writing is not, it would require a significant amount of time and to update and to continually revise estimates of the debt capacity of the state and to write these detailed policy guidelines. And I think that it would probably, it's generally not the role of the financial advisor to a state to write that kind of report. Certainly they would be consulted and would work with the bond committee to prepare such a report, but I think that the actual responsibility is better off in the hands of the state rather than in others.
What would you think, I just pose this to you because it's you're the one that issued the original report, mm-hmm. which I applaud you for. It was very, very well
Thank
done.
You.
It says May in here, and what would be your thinking if instead of May it says shall, and we take it a step farther and form this into something that was from day one more than could be?
Well, I would say that our recommendation in the report was that there be a staff.
That there shall be one, and that, okay, and I think that the next thing is I'm not sure if this is the proper person to ask, Mr. Chairman, or not.
Go ahead. I could just interrupt for just a second. Going back to that first question on page four regarding the State Bond Committee may appoint an executive director, in discussions, and Commissioner Heath will testify on this, we had at one time worked with the idea of putting Shell in. However, because of his existing staff and the capacity that they have right now, they can possibly handle it. This would give them an avenue if they needed to appoint an executive director at a later time in the event of need, that they could do it, and it would give them a little bit of flexibility. And there was also some fiscal questions on the extra person for personal services and what his capacity would be. Did you want to continue, Representative Wardy?
No, I think that Senator Rohde might.
Okay. I have Representative Wente down first, and then I'll.
I yield to the gentleman who gets.
Thank you, Senator.
I would, I guess we can, the fiscal model reflects that they intend to hire staff, but at any rate, your comments were more directed toward the recommendations you made in your report as opposed to the bill. I guess I'd like you to comment to the extent that this bill does incorporate all your recommendations, your comments in terms of the moral obligation and the affordability, and that I don't see specifically addressed in the legislation. Would you feel more comfortable with the specific guidelines that are written into this legislation as opposed to waiting for criteria to be developed at a later date?
Well, this the legislation does address the recommendations we made regarding the State Bond Committee itself. I think that if you look at Section 3, Part B, it does fairly clearly spell out exactly what sort of report would be called for, and it does talk about debt affordability, and it also talks about the distinction between tax-supported and revenue-supported in Part 3, Section 3. And then it talks about, in Item 6, the identification of each issue for which the state has pledged some form of indirect support for the debt, including any moral obligation. So I think that the report as outlined in the legislation does cover those items that we recommended.
And at least provide the framework for which it certainly doesn't implement much of anything in that regard, to the extent that we're speakers and presidents' desk are piled with a report from the Department of Revenue or any other department that they. I guess I have some concern if the concern that you have pointed out in your report are as serious as you imply them to be, why we are not going a step or two further in this regard. I guess I don't see the problem being solved by another report cranked out of the department or any committee, unless there is requirements or methods or criteria laid out in the statute that respond to what the conditions of that report, what the conditions of the report.
In our report, the recommendation, we took it a bit further, and we suggested that the State Bond Committee be given the authority to, I think we said veto or overrule any debt issuance that would be that they thought might jeopardize the creditworthiness of the state. For instance, a bond issuance by one of the entities that did carry the state's moral obligation, which the State Bond Committee, after thoroughly reviewing the specific issuance and the sources of revenue that were expected to pay off the bonds, felt that there was some question as to whether those revenues would actually be adequate over the term of the bonds to repay the obligation, and therefore the moral obligation may come into play, and the state somewhere down the road might have to pay off the bonds. In that instance, if the state felt that it was not in the state's interest to issue these bonds, they would, the State Bond Committee could be given the authority not to allow that debt issuance to go through. As
well, my final point, I guess, for the committee is, I guess we look at the federal thing, everyone, the courts are there, everyone knows what the impact of debt is, but let's go ahead and do it anyway. I guess the report and additional staff and additional money to write the report, if there's no requirement or system set up under which we follow the recommendations of that report, all due regard to the sponsor, I question whether we are going to accomplish what is being recommended.
Just one comment, then I'm going to go to Senator Rohde and Representative Furness further. In the drafting of the bill, when we worked on it, we went through a number of drafts. One of the problems that we had with the municipalities on a question of home rule and what their authority and responsibility is at the municipal level, and being able to intervene from the state level, it was sort of a public policy question to come up with sort of the idea that we wanted to allow some flexibility at the local level versus having all the control at the state level. And this was a first step sort of bill to achieve the goals that we wanted in this legislative session, whereas next year we could probably go in a further direction as far as maybe more control. But at this point, we were finding it was difficult to institute that at a local level and put all that control under the State Bond Committee. And we thought we would give this a trial, go at it, and see how we go with it. Senator Rohde.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just might add that we might take a look at how AHFC conforms to the reporting requirements, which are probably the most rigorous of any public corporation. In fact, they are incorporated in the section of the bill or other public entities. And that might be a good analytical tool to, lay on the table those concerns that the representative went and raised, and also an analytical tool for the chair to use and analyze what it will. My question is with regard to staffing that was raised earlier. Is staffing really a high priority in terms of changes in this area, or is it relatively low priority, considering the fact that the Department of Revenue has staff and a very able staff, having dealt with them for a number of years? I found their staff to be excellent, and under Commissioner Heath, I think they really improved. And as I've dealt with them, staffing has never been a significant problem. There may be other areas to work in. I guess it's a leading question. Isn't the staffing question one of the lower priorities?
Yes, certainly. The highest priority is the methodology to review state debt issuance and to look at state debt issuance in the framework that we present in the report. The staffing issue. I should explain how when we were writing the report, we talked to many of the commissioners and their staffs who are involved in the debt management and debt issuance process. It was our feeling from those interviews, and I think the thoughts were expressed by some of the people we spoke to, that in order for the Department of Revenue to look at debt issuance in the way that we felt was needed, that there was necessary to have an additional staff. So that recommendation, I think, was something that we picked up from some of our conversations.
Just a brief comment in terms of the question. Too often we impose requirements on the commissioners that don't allow them to run their departments the way they should. I think that's bad government. It would seem to me that if we put requirements down, as we've done with the AHFC, that authorize an additional staff position or two, if there's a problem after that, then move on to the next step. But rather than try as a citizen legislator to administer the department.
Excuse me, this is the Juno moderator. I hate to interrupt, but we're having an extreme difficulty hearing and interpreting
Even if I were close to the microphone, you might have some difficulty interpreting what I said, but I'll try to get closer. That's my comment about staffing. I'd like to move next to the question of moral obligation. Isn't it a better analytical tool to talk about the repayment of the debt and the potential for covering that debt with revenues by, you know, whatever means are allowable under the statute that authorizes the debt, rather than talk about the question of moral obligation per se, because I think it's a generic term that doesn't really allow us to deal in a very hard-nosed financial fashion with the debt that we or citizens and towns have created.
Well, I agree that the coverage, the adequacy of revenues to repay the obligation is certainly important in credit analysis of the security. The reason I concentrate the remarks on moral obligation debt is because that is the only debt which the state has a somewhat contingent liability to repay. And certain revenue-supported bonds that are issued by HSC, for instance, do not carry the moral obligation. So I would say that there is probably not the importance to review that debt issuance by the State Bond Committee that there is on a bond issuance, say, of the Alaska Power Authority, which would carry the moral obligation. So I think the distinction is very important from the state standpoint.
Follow-up question?
No. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Rohde. Representative Furness, then Senator Strzelczewski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. My questions can best be addressed to Commissioner Heath. I'll pass at this time.
Very good. Thank you, Representative Furness. Senator Strzelczewski.
Yes, very briefly. This study was started when I chaired Budget and Audit, not for any real knowledge of we have a problem in a particular area. This gets to Representative Wenny's concern, but the fact that there were many agencies, including many municipalities in the state, issuing debt, there was no good overview feeling of just what some of the implications of moral obligation and municipal debt would have. So I think that you get into a question of how much the state's role should be in a coordinative kind of function. Matter of fact, I put in a piece of legislation last year, had considerable work with Commissioner Heath, and he's done some things with the State Bond Committee in the absence of legislation that perhaps would have gone a bit further in that coordinative role of the state. And it's a very delicate balance, obviously, between the two entities. It seems to me that there's some merit in getting all of that information in one place so you could look at it. My kind of gut feeling is that the rating agency, the people that actually say, okay, this is your rating and you can sell so many bonds, are going to go ahead for financial reasons of security. They might be telling you it's okay to go ahead with debt longer than it's a good thing for the state to be doing. In other words, there's actual security out there for that, but that the state may be getting into some very serious financial problems in the terms of the amount of, you know, their percentage they have to put in to pay that debt. So I think that this bill really brings the information to one place, doesn't make value judgments, nor does it tell people what they can do. But it's the first time it starts to bring in this question of municipal debt. I think one of the major things we're faced with now is the whole question of financing on schools. That's a matter before the court. So it brings some immediacy for the state to start to understand what's happening out there, whether this vehicle is totally appropriate. But it seems to me it brings that information together.
Thank you, Senator. Any further questions at this time from any of the committee members? Thank you, Wes, for coming forward and
let me
ask you a question. Representative Wenny has a...
Could you give us just a brief overview of the organization you represent?
The Municipal Finance Officers Association is the national association of professionals in the public finance area. Our membership includes investment bankers, public finance officers at the state and local level, both appointed and elected. It includes attorneys, anyone who's involved in the debt issuance, debt management area. We also, the MFOA also oversees what's called the National Council on Governmental Accounting, which sets the accounting standards for the public sector. My division of the MFOA is a research and consulting firm, and we work for state and local governments on contracts such as this and specific financing plans, preparation of financing plans for governments.
Thank you.
specifically sought out that organization?
Mr. Chairman, just through the chair, we had a contractual RFPs went out to many, many different firms, and the committee, based on some criteria, selected this firm, and that resulted in this particular study. I think the first time bringing together all of the information on all of the debt issuing agencies. So that was, yes, in terms of a contract. They made a report, however, to the new, it was not completed during my tenure, to the new Budget and Audit Committee last fall, right.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I think you were just briefly in Ketchikan on your way up here to Anchorage. I don't know if you were working for the city of Ketchikan, but it might be interesting since Representative Blank lives in Ketchikan.
I hope you were reviewing their side of the APA negotiations.
Thank you very much. Appreciate you coming forward. At this time, I will speak into the mic as clearly as possible. We have Commissioner Heath. We do have a few other legislators that, we have two other legislators that are going to testify, Representative Tischer and Representative Lindauer. However, I don't see them here. I hope they'll be here later. So we'll just move right along. And Commissioner Heath, if you'd like to come forward, we sure appreciate your comments at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Bob Heath, Commissioner of Revenue. With your permission, Mr. Chairman, I would like to just go through the bill and in a very general way and make our comments as sort of section by section, if I may. Section 1, perhaps I have to say at the present time, the State Bond Committee is sort of a floating organization between Commerce, Administration, and Revenue. Commerce is designated statutory chair, whereas Revenue staffs and is secretary. This bill firmly places it, the organization within Revenue and adds CNRA as a fourth member and a member of a public board as a fifth member.
Commissioner Heath, I'm just going to interject here for a minute, and I wanted to sort of just clarify this for the committee's edification here. There's been some question about the fact of this sort of turf battle between the Department of Revenue and the Department of Commerce and Economic Development. Maybe you could just elaborate a little bit on the merits of really having it in Revenue, considering that your background and the background of the Department of Revenue, and it is not really a turf question, but it really does lie in the Department of Revenue because of the statistical information, the fact that you have. Maybe you could elaborate on that.
Mr. Chairman, as Revenue has always provided the staff for this function, we have developed the expertise to function as this bill would require us to. We could also comment that I don't consider there to be a turf war. As long as Revenue's expertise is allowed to be used within the committee, I have no strong feelings as to who should chair, but I think the expertise of Revenue should be utilized.
Very good, and I feel just a few.
Next section that is of interest to us is
Representative Wente, and also the Juno transmitting people have said make sure we talk clearly into the mics as close as possible. Representative Wente has a question.
Whether you want to hear what then you're going to say. I would, isn't it likely, well, put it this way, what type of agency is likely to be the public corporation which is an instrumentality of the state authorized to issue bonds? Aren't most of those within the Department of Commerce, unless you're talking a municipality?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
HFC and the Municipal Bond Bank are attached to Revenue, mm-hmm. and ADA is attached to Commerce.
Our
authority is attached to Commerce. So at this point in time, I would say they are split.
Commissioner, if you'll continue, please.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This gives the Bond Committee the authority to transact business by electronic media, which we requested and appreciate seeing in the bill. that requires a state bond committee to prepare an annual report for submission to the governor and the legislature. This is a new step, and it follows the report that I think, in fact, as I view it now, it would be merely an updating and continuation of the report that we already have in front of us here from the organization you just heard speak. I think that all the data gathering has gone into that, and the work that's been done in
outstanding in the whole state. Is it true that there's just sort of a hodgepodge, sort of a grouping of debt and how it's collected now? Is there any agency in government in the state of Alaska that collects information or data on total debt?
Mr. Chairman, at the present time, there is no central gathering point for debt throughout the state. As discussed with Senator Sergielewski last year, the State Bond Committee at present has at least started toward a calendar, and strictly on a voluntary basis, which is fine, but I'm not sure how far we can carry it, and without some structure, I'm not sure how we'd ever make a very effective tool. Which brings you to 3C, but develop written informational guidelines concerning the management of all debt by each debt issuing entity of the state. This one is, I believe, truly a starting point, where we at the state level would try to write guidelines for entities within the state. It is an area in which we in revenue feel that we would need some outside assistance, which is basically the reason for any fiscal note at all. We think we'd have to have some outside help for this, and I don't feel we have the expertise in-house at present. Section D of the same of 3, there's been some controversy. The State Bond Committee shall require that a person who provides financial programming or marketing assistance in connection with the issuance of debt be compensated for services on a determined fee basis, not based on the amount of debt issued. It is our understanding that this would apply to a financial advisor, but not to an underwriter. And that, if that be true, we certainly have no objection to that. But
Chairman. Representative Ward has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Why is that your understanding? Do you have anything in writing that would state that?
Mr. Chairman, I do not have anything in writing. I've had discussions with Representative Ewing's counsel, and it is the intent of this not to include underwriters. There may be some legal question as to whether or not it does, and we would have to sort that out.
Representative Furness, a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the Commissioner, I'm trying to determine what is the difference. Currently, you have the ability in statute to use outside assistance, and it appears that the rewrite of this section of the statute is to get a little bit better control, at least of the fees. I fail to see now if we're going to be saving any monies, or if we're back to this to the same status quo, with the exception of perhaps a staff dedicated through an exec director or whatever. So perhaps you can share the difference.
Mr. Chairman, the we have an apropos situation this year. We have no authorized debt, and traditionally the financial advisor has been paid as a percentage of debt, for instance. If we go through at least until the starting of calendar year 85, there would be no debt issuance, and I would have a little trouble paying a financial advisor if we stuck to a simple percentage. So we agree with Representative Ewing that a fee basis, be it an hourly or a flat fee for a particular job, is more appropriate rather than a percentage of debt that's not going to be issued.
Mr. Chairman, one question.
Yes, Representative.
When we speak of underwriters, are we primarily talking about attorney? Are we talking about a person with expertise in the issuance of bonds?
Mr. Chairman, the underwriter is the person who actually takes the bond in the final. They're the buyer and then perhaps and mostly reseller of the bond, the marketer of the bond.
Yeah, I believe in the case of the underwriter, they're the ones that actually go and sell the bonds on the market. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Commissioner Heath, and an that is on a percentage basis. However, what we're talking about here is a financial advisor, which would be on a fixed fee basis. Is there much difference as far as the dollar amount between the fixed fee basis and the percentage basis? And are you using the fixed fee basis now?
Mr. Chairman, we are in the process of going to a fixed fee basis at present. It is the intent of the bond committee to go this route.
Representative Furness, and then Representative Pestinger, then Representative Wente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To the Commissioner, can you give us an example of the difference? What are we currently paying to financial advisors versus a projection of the anticipated level fee, or whatever you're going to call it?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Furness, I would not necessarily suggest there would be any difference in the amount of dollars paid out, merely the basis under which they're paid. It would depend upon the requirements placed upon the financial advisor at any point in time. Last year, between bond counsel and financial advisor, I think we paid something like $285,000. But we did have a bond issue last year for some $78 million, I believe. Within the next year, we anticipate no issuance of debt at a state level, in which a financial advisor, the bond committee, would be able to obtain a fee. So we almost have to have some other mechanism to compensate them. And we feel that it is a more comfortable position for us to pay them a fee for services rendered, and they will be totally free to act on behalf of the state bond committee without any bias toward issuance of debt or non-issuance of debt.
Perhaps just a comment there. Maybe is there a question of a conflict of interest that might incur? Is that what you're saying, Commissioner Heath? Possibly.
Mr. Chairman, there might be a perception of a conflict of interest, and this would go around that question.
Representative Pestinger, then Representative Wente.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Commissioner, I'm looking at this section C where the bond committee would provide the guidelines concerning the management of all debt. Guidelines would include the level of debt, the structuring of debt offerings, and the repayment schedule. I really support the consolidation of debt information, that we receive it in a timely manner. I think that gives our finance committees a wonderful opportunity to work with you. But I really look at this section as being a very key section because it may suggest answers to the problem. We talked about veto authority, debt limit legislation, etc. I guess my question is, did I hear you correctly that you think, to what extent does your Department of Revenue now have the expertise to provide this, the guidelines on level of debt, structuring of debt offerings, and the repayment schedule? To what extent does your department have this expertise? And what concerns me is if we have to go outside to get this expertise, just who this person or people or firm are. Do you have a firm in mind? I've seen us go to consultants, and quite frankly, I've been extremely disappointed in their common sense, and I've been extremely disappointed in the fee that we've paid them. What is your expertise, and do you have anyone in mind, and how essential do you assess this section to be?
Mr. Chairman, we consider this to be a very key section in the sense this will perhaps tell us what the next step is or isn't. As far as expertise within house, we have limited expertise. I do not consider us to be the final authority to answer this kind of a question. And thus we attached a fiscal note for contractual services to assist us most specifically with this question. And I have no firm in mind. I really don't know who would do it.
Mr. Chairman, can I speak? Follow up on that.
Yeah, Representative Furness has a comment to the Representative Pestinger's question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. I note the fiscal note is $50,000. That is not the financial, that is contractual. You're proposing then to pay the financial advisor out of this $50,000? Is that the intent?
Mr. Chairman, within our regular budget, we have an amount of $325,000.
Sure, how much?
$325,000. This would be in addition to that. The $325,000 was based on the fees we paid over the last year, and this $50,000 recognizes this increment.
Representative Wente has a question at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One thing that seems to be readily apparent this week is that we can't pay the Commissioner of Commerce enough to keep him on board.
Revenue.
Commissioner Revenue. To the extent of the importance of that that obligation and the responsibilities of that department, they're obviously in a tender area. But I would add, to what extent, what is the relationship in terms of all the departments and the financial advisors, the bond counsels, and the underwriters that they all have? Essentially, we've been talking about your department, but don't most of the debt-issuing agencies have their own?
Mr. Chairman, all debt-issuing agencies will have both bond counsel and financial advisor, in many cases underwriters, or underwriters will be formed for a specific issue.
That they select on their own, and there's probably, I suspect, no coordination between all the agencies, that they all go out, they all get their own fees. That's a concern greater than me, whether you pay a fee, I guess everybody within the market. I guess I'd like to see some focus, and certainly the Department of Revenue is the best place for that, on having those advisors available and available to all agencies. I think there have been some questions raised in the last few years on the relationship between the agencies, between these consultants that are available to them. And to me, that's a much greater issue in terms of what is addressed in Section D or Subsection D there. I'd frankly like to see the committee review that relationship to a much greater extent than the questions I've seen asked here today.
Mr. Chairman, if I might just comment on the process that we've gone through, or that I've seen over the last year. We have gone through RFPs in a number of the agencies, including HFC and ADA, and it is it's always difficult to develop a good criteria for personal services. That's what you're really talking about. But there has been a very heavy attempt by assigning points to the expertise, points to the fees proposed, and then taking four or five people independently reviewing each of the proposals that come in for bond counsel, financial advisor, and each one rates separately. The ratings are then tabulated, and the decisions are made based off of that. Not a perfect system, but it's an attempt to be as objective as you can be.
Well, I guess my concern is coordination. I almost hazard to ask the question, how much money the state is paying in duplicating these services between the housing area, the power authority, the state issues. It'd be an interesting question for our finance director to ask and get an answer on how much we are actually paying out in that type of services, and whether that could be, whether it's, you know, maybe it's not rational, or maybe the state would not be best served by trying to certainly at least coordinate that, but maybe even consolidate that in terms of the services that the Department of Revenue can provide to these agencies, rather than contracting that out individually on their own. My concern, and I frankly think you know some of the issue I'm getting at, my concern is whether some of this advice is in the interest of the state overall, or in the interest of a particular agency, which may or may not be consistent with what I consider, or what even the legislature may consider to be the interest of the people of Alaska.
Representative Wente, then, the way I'm interpreting this as the chairman of the committee is that essentially you're talking about the financial advisor situation and the different advising that he does to different entities that are issuing debt from the municipal level to HFC, to ADA, to every level, and trying to have it set up a more coordinated sort of way so that there might be one or two financial advisors that could coordinate everything instead of having all these tentacles out there. And then the real cost of the state is tremendous. Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, If I can interpret your intent in this legislation and the intent of the report of trying to provide the coordination, I think that's, you know, that is another area. And essentially, we're all, I guess, the bond council is the same way. I don't know, I assume you're fitting him in with, as a financial advisor. As a, you know, and clearly, the underwriters, is a, you know, the method and the services, they are probably a different category. But if your intent is to provide some type of coordination, I think there's an area there. Whether we're talking, we're getting advice in terms of the responsibilities of the state overall, or breaking it down to advice of what's in the best interest of a particular agency, which may or may not be in the overall interest of the state.
As I recall, when we were drafting the bill, Representative Wendy, we did work on the idea of bond council, and there would be a possible amendment that we could put in there that would actually fit into the bond council question as far as the, a fixed fee situation too. But we thought we would wait and put that into the committee substitute and we would look at it, but that was a good point that you had there. Any other comments on that, Commissioner?
Mr. Chairman, one comment I might make to Representative Wendy. We, this year, when we've got RFPs for bond council, we put a stipulation in there that they would not represent any other state agency. And we were able to find what we consider excellent counsel, even with that very tough proviso in there.
Mr. Chairman. Yeah, I'm going to go to Senator Strzelczuk, and then I've got a list here. Senator Strzelczuk, Ward, Pessinger, and Furness.
Mr. Chairman, interesting thicket and meeting. It seems to me, just in looking at the legislation, it's mainly information, getting information, with the exception of a couple of areas. One is you're saying you would do the fee basis for the financial programming or marketing assistance. I think it would be very useful to your committee and certainly to me to have an overall description of the role of the bond counsel, of the financial advisor, and of the underwriter. Also some knowledge of what's actually happening in the field. I don't know how many oxes you're goring, and it might be interesting to use the, find the process all the way from, you know, the North Slope Borough and how they do it to municipalities, school districts, and the various agencies. I think that's one important thing. The other area that you're talking about is setting the standard for interest rating and how that handles for everybody. And I think that, again, is would give consistency in reporting. I'd like to have the commissioner, when he reaches that, to maybe make some comment on that. But I think there's a lot of confusion about the role that these different advisors and financial people play when they come into it. And you're not just talking, the state, as the state itself, issues very few bonds. As a matter of fact, we're not issuing bonds now, which I think kind of makes good sense. But there's a whole lot of other agencies that of the state that do, and the municipalities. And so we have to look at that broader picture when we talk about this, the impact of this fee and the interest rates.
Thank you, Senator Strzelczuk. We could get that prepared remarks on that and information on that, statistical information on where the where that money is being expended all the way down to the different financial advisors and bond council, and get it on one sort of report that we could all have before us. Is that what you're...
I think that would be useful so you know what you're talking
sure.
about and what that impact is on existing process right now. What would that do to people? And would it be to our benefit to change that?
Very good. Thank you. At this time, we will go to Ward, Representative Ward.
Just to follow up, the RFP said for the State Bond Council that no other state agencies, and follow up on what the Senator just stated, did it, are they also, whoever's a, are they the municipal bond councils also for various municipalities?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know whether they are or not. We did not put that stipulation on there. We really asked that they not to be bond council to any other state agency.
Okay, I don't know why I've got a feeling. I've got a feeling that that there's several things that I'm sure that bothers everybody about bonds and that we need them, but there seems to be a real lack of understanding, and I don't know who's pulling the strings. I've read a report by a Woodrow Flynn or something, which I found was amazingly creative, and they're municipal bond council, but anyway, they're just out for a fee as far as I can see. But I question this here. Might as well ask you, because this has been bothering me. There's a proposal for some $11 million to be given to the city of, not to the city, but to an electrical firm, electrical co-op in Seward. And they would go out for revenue bonds. Do you perceive, the reason that they're going to have this, because Seward right now is getting all of its power from Chugach Electric here in Anchorage. They have no electrical power of their own, and they need to have it so they can build a prison down there. But they want to borrow that through the local co-op's revenue bonds in order to build it so they can have enough electricity to run the $60 million prison that the administration wants to build in Seward, because they have no power for it. And would that come under, if this was legislation within law now, would that particular local co-op come underneath the jurisdiction of the bond council?
Mr. Chairman, it would not. The only place we would see it under this legislation was the calendaring of debt by the city of Seward or a co-op or whatever the issuing entity might be. In the case of a co-op, I suspect we'd be totally outside of the state's purview, even under this legislation. The city of Seward would be at least a reporting requirement.
Even if they were utilizing a state $60 million prison facility for the purpose of issuing the bonds, the revenue bonds, then we still would not be able to have a controlling mechanism over it.
We would have no reporting requirements nor no control, because it would be exactly the same as if a private utility issued those bonds. The co-op is, for this purpose, a private utility.
And if the state didn't make payments on the prison's electrical bill?
Correct.
Then those bonds would default? I'm just wondering, we seem to have a lot of...
Perhaps I could answer your question.
Senator Rohde?
There's no provision under the statutes for co-ops to issue tax-free bonds. They would be treated as any other private corporation. They presently get their money from the REA, or what's known as the CDC.
We can't hear you in Fairbank.
Because I haven't switched my microphone on. they get the money from the CDC in Washington, which is the central financing bank for the REA, and they don't utilize any of the mechanisms that are under the purview by the chairman of this bill. However, you're correct in pointing out that this is one area that is being looked at as a potential recipient of state assistance, including possible assistance via the bond market.
Just a question along those lines. Was there a moral obligation in regard to those revenue bonds then to the state of Alaska, even though it wouldn't be included in this particular bill, Commissioner Keith?
Mr. Chairman, I don't see how the state could be involved in any issue by a co-op.
This is Fairbanks. I have the loan programs here.
Representative Kopanen, is that you?
This is Representative Kopanen. The project in question is a proposal to the Alaska Power Authority Rural Electrification Revolving Loan Fund. It's not one of the approved ones, but it is a proposal that we considered the last time the Loan Committee met. It's in HB 650.
That's just a comment then, Representative Copeland. Do you have any questions?
No, if people could speak up more clearly, it gets rather difficult to follow the discussion. I know I have the bad habit of dropping my voice down lower as I continue talking, and that seems to happen to everybody, at least today.
Representative Copeland, this is the second day of hearings, and you always come in loud and clear. I'm going to try to get Senator Rohde to turn on his mic here.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Furness, and then Representative Pesman.
But I have a suggestion here.
Sure.
We can share the same mic, and we can give Pat and
Ron can't remember
a separate mic here.
This is Anchorage. We're going to do some switching here for a minute.
Let's just do that. We both have real strong voices.
Is, are all senators got
no,
these quirks like this?
I do have a question.
Representative Furness has a question, then Representative Passenger.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Commissioner Heath, there seemed to be a question that we keep skating around, and I'm not sure if it's been asked directly, so I'll attempt to do that. And the question is it feasible for the bond committee and its staff, be it the executive director, whatever, and financial advisor, to represent and coordinate all bond issues that are issued by the state of Alaska, state entities? Is that feasible for one group to handle this coordination?
Representative Furness, are you asking of all state agencies or of all state agencies plus the other political subdivisions?
I'm speaking primarily of state agencies. I would assume they're state agencies and those entities created by the state, not the municipalities.
Mr. Chairman, at the present time, I believe all of the issuing entities of the state do go through the State Bond Committee.
So the only thing we don't have, it appears that we have limited control or intervention in the affairs of a local municipality, with the exception of considering the moral obligation or whatever obligation that the state has in making it a part of the overall picture. Is that true?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Then the other question is, you mentioned in the RFP that went out, the council was supposed to not to represent any other state agency. Why is that?
Mr. Chairman, our attempt was merely to get as unbiased advice as we could at the State Bond Committee level, so there would never be a conflict or a perception of a conflict. If, for instance, council were representing both the State Bond Committee and HFC, there could be a potential conflict between what the state at the State Bond Committee level wanted to do and what HFC wanted to do. And council would thus be put in a conflict position to advise both entities.
Well, let me go back to maybe my question a minute ago. When I speak of all state agencies that issue bonds, I'm speaking of Alaska Housing Finance Corporation too. Is it feasible that the bond committee, as we perceive here, plus its staff and the advisor, could also handle any issuance that the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation? Again, it's somewhat of a super committee, a super board, as we oftentimes refer to, that does this for all of the state.
Mr. Chairman, we look at each bond issue of HFC as a state bond committee. We can and have upon occasion discussed the terms and conditions under which they were issued, and some have been changed. As one single issuing agency, I believe the needs of these agencies are too diverse, the types of instruments issued. A housing bond is a very different animal from an economic development bond. So you do need different types of expertise to issue the different types of debt instruments.
So are you saying that it's not feasible or possible then to find that a group of persons would have that wider range of a expertise to handle this very diversity then, what you're saying?
Mr. Chairman? Certainly not impossible, but very difficult, because, for instance, certain underwriters specialize in certain types of issues, so you couldn't always use the same group of underwriters. And certain councils specialize in other areas, as do financial advisors, and are, you know, within their own organizations, they merely have more expertise in one particular field than another, one type of debt issuance.
But, Mr. Chairman, if I may continue, as I understand, the underwriter normally is that financial purchaser or facilitator that would change with each issue anyway. He's probably the most external person of the body, as opposed to the financial advisor, who could be part of the staff or selected on an individual basis. Am I correct in that?
Mr. Chairman, the underwriter is the furthest away from the agency, if you will, but still a certain integral part, because he's your final seller in most cases.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Passenger.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Commissioner, I wanted to compliment Wesley Hugh. I think a lot of us believe that after reviewing this Government Finance Research Center, the Municipal Finance Officers Association, I consider this one of the first well-written, informative reports from a consulting service that is worth the money that I've seen. I want to compliment you on what I consider good work product. And with that, I think maybe the department does have the expertise to get a handle on these guidelines for such associations as this.
My comment is, it is an excellent report. I had the occasion to read it between here and New York one day.
I just want to reiterate, I've seen a lot of bad reports for the money paid, and this is one of the first good ones I've seen, and it's nice to know we can do it.
Thank you, Representative Passenger. Representative Wente has a question.
I would assume, Commissioner, that there is some, looking at the state agencies, there is still some concern for the need to maintain a degree of independence in relationship to the federal taxing requirements in terms of the independence of the agency as well.
Mr. Chairman, I believe that the major difference is probably in the role of each agency. ADA is charged with economic development. HFC is charged with housing. Power Authority is charged with power projects. So there's a different role for each one of these agencies, and thus a different focus.
As I recall, Mr. Chairman, that issue kind of raised its head when we had Fine Homes Task Force report last year that recommended one board of directors. That same issue there apply to the independence of the agency in regard to its debt issue as well?
To a fairly substantial degree, because you need to be expert in the statute and the role of each individual agency. In other words, the advisors to an agency need to be an expert on that agency, as opposed to being an expert on ADA, HFC, and three others. There is some overlap, of course.
Senator Rohde?
Just a brief comment that I think there's very good reason to have multiple instrumentalities advising various state agencies. For example, the success that AHFC and ADA have enjoyed has been in part from the skill of the people that they have employed in tracking their bond issues. There are different types of issues. We're talking about putting together a banking package for several thousand borrowers in the case of AHFC, or in the case of ADA, skillfully crafting an issue to finance a commercial project. I think it's in the best interest of the people of Alaska to zero in on the type of skill that's needed for a particular bond issue. If we're going to see the various instrumentalities that we have work as well as they've been working in the past, and I think they've been working well.
Thank you. If there are no further questions, we're going to move right along. Thank you, Commissioner Heath. If we have any other questions, we'll certainly ask or call upon you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
At this time, we'll call Mike Lynch with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation to comment on the bill briefly. Thank you. Do we get to find like that?
The elephants or Alaska?
Would you like one?
If you sell enough bonds.
On the European market.
If they're elephants, I get the first question.
There may be some questions on the Euro bonds today, but if you could keep your comments to the bill, I think, first.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, I'm Michael Lynch, Executive Director of Alaska Housing. I wanted to make a couple of general comments on the bill. I guess for AHFC, this bill sort of looks like the leveling of the playing field. Just a few comments on what we do. Number one, we go to the voters for approval of all our VETS bonds already. Number two, before we issue them, the State Bond Committee has to approve each issue. Number three, in our budget, we project annually our debt leveling, or our debt issuing levels. Number four, the legislature sets our annual issuance levels. Number five, the State Bond Committee comprises a majority of our board. So that in all ways, we're pretty well controlled already. We, in essence, do everything that's in this bill already. The State Bond Committee looks at every issue we sell as members of our board, looks at our structures, so on. So we really look upon this bill as putting to some of the other debt-issuing entities the same requirements that are on us. And for that reason, since we find we've been very able to operate under the constraints, so we think everybody else ought to be able to operate that way reasonably, and that the product of the bill will be positive. Also, we think that by putting this structure in place and being able to say that the state is overseeing all debt issuing, at least on an informational basis, has a handle on what it is laying out some guidelines. We can allay some of the fears in the external world that relate to the fact, how does such a small state have such large debt needs? Are they really looking at what's going on? Are all the entities working together? We think the ability to point at an entity and say, yes, they're overseeing it, they're controlling it, will have a very positive effect on the bond market. Thirdly, we think the idea of a calendaring, which it will not be exact, we recognize that, still will be helpful. We think more helpful to the small issuers than to Alaska Housing. Alaska Housing is now selling AAA rated bonds. We have the best rated bonds in the state. We have a high presence in the market, so we do not have a problem of crowding out in the market, but I think that some of the smaller issuing entities would have, and it would be helpful to them to know when other Alaskan agencies or municipalities are going to be issuing, because there's always a limited number or a finite number of buyers out there. Some specific comments on the bill. The bill addresses the idea of using TIC. I think that virtually every issuer already uses TIC. It's been a recognized fact for a while that that there is a time value to money, and so I think we've all gone to calculating our bonds and our bond costs on a TIC basis. On the question of fees on basis of as opposed to a per bond basis for financial programming or marketing assistance, we have the same concern that Commissioner Heath has, that it clearly not include underwriters, since there is no way that Alaska can decide how the underwriting market is going to charge. We did go to a fee basis as opposed to a per bond basis through an RFP procedure about a year ago. It probably cut our costs in half or close to in half. Also, the legislature changed our legislation a year ago and changed it from requiring that we have a financial advisor to say to leaving it at our option. We use financial advisors only when we're engaging in new structures or new types of bonds, where the bonds are routine and similar to the ones we've been issuing in the past. We do not use a financial advisor, so we've been able to cut our fees that way. In the question of guidelines, I'd like to echo a little bit of what Commissioner Heath was alluding to when he was talking about the difference in types of bonds the agencies issue. I think that guidelines as to total amount and maturities probably would be very workable. Guidelines that got right down into structuring would be very difficult. I think, for example, no agency, no state committee could have sat down a year ago and said, yes, Alaska Housing can issue Euro bonds, and this will be the structure, because even Alaska Housing didn't have any idea at that time what the structure would be in the Euro market. When you approach new types of structures, when you're seeking to cut your interest costs, there's an education period, a learning curve, and I don't think that this is something that could be laid out as a guideline in advance by a state committee. Other than that, I have no comments except to say we support the bill, and again that we think that it'd be a very workable concept, since we're already basically living with all of this.
One brief question on the calendaring section of the bill. Do you feel that you can work, you have a pretty good idea over a 12-month period that you could list what your debt issuance is going to be. You pretty much work on a ahead of schedule sort of basis so that you can present that back to the state bank.
We, Mr. Chairman, we predict our bonding needs on an annual basis. We project our revenue flows on a monthly basis and generally can tell you within 60 days of when we'll be issuing debt. So we have a reasonable handle on it. Within a 90-day period, we can predict it practically to the week.
Thank you, Representative Ward, and then Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to have your comments on one portion of this bill that is not in here, and that is if we allow if the Railroad Authority becomes law and it can issue revenue bonds, and toll bridge authorities become law and they can issue bonds, and if this mechanism is to bring them all together, the fact that the State Bond Committee does not have right of veto, whether the indirect or direct state funding, but nevertheless the state funding, and the State Bond Committee does not have absolute right of veto. Would you like to comment on whether that's a positive, a negative, something we're going to address later? What's your feelings on it?
It's a difficult question to answer. I think that on a railroad authority or a toll bridge authority, the control mechanism would be exercised in the same way it's exercised on Alaska Housing, and that is through its board of directors. The State Bond Committee does not approve or disapprove our taxable issues, but since they're a majority of our board, and since they're aware of the thoughts of the State Bond Committee, they have the right to veto or pass our bills. I would assume that there would be legislative control of these authorities, and through the board, they would be controlled.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're attempting to do that whenever possible, but sometimes, by May, it doesn't always work out that way. And there's a lot of authorities already in existence that I find out about every day, but it's they all don't have the same makeup as your board.
Well, Mr. Chairman, if I might make one further comment, I believe that our board was different up until 2 or 3 years ago, and there was a lack of control or direction in the agency, and at that time the legislature changed the board.
Thank you very much. Representative Furness.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. To Mr. Lambs, you've answered part of my question, and that is currently you have some flexibility in the decision concerning financial advisors. The last half of my question is, what is your contractual budget assigned to financial advisors or whatever you recall?
Mr. Chairman, I don't recall. I will get that information for you.
That's fine. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. If you could provide that to the committee itself. Representative Wente.
The bill provides for the commissioner to expand for his membership on the committee. And then it has provision for a member of the board of directors of public corporation, which isn't an instrumentality. For the most part, aren't at least two of the commissioners that are named in that section already on almost every board of every instrumentality?
Mr. Chairman, I believe that's correct, but I've never really looked at it.
Do you see a benefit for a member of the board of directors of public corporation, which isn't an instrumentality, state authorized issue bonds? Is there a need when you got most of them on there already?
I looked at the section asking for an outside board member. I assumed that the feeling was that it is always helpful to have public input into any of these boards or into the State Bond Committee. As you know, Alaska Housing has got three of those members on its board, and it's got two outside public members, and those outside public members do provide a very useful input to the board. They give you, if you wish, the reaction of what's going on out in the marketplace, how the agency is perceived by the public world, as opposed to having strictly a government board, and I think it does serve a useful function in that case.
Well, I guess unless you're reading something in here, I'm not reading. It's
not, I don't see anything that says it has to be a public member or other. A member of the board of directors of a public corporation, which is a municipality of a state authorized issue bond.
You are correct. I assumed that that was a public member, probably. I read something into the bill that wasn't there.
Maybe it'd be best that we do that. Or I'd raise the question whether you want somebody representing the municipality in that committee as well, if that their issues are going to be a part of that report as well. And I assume that's the rationale, again, to the sponsor, of why you put the Commissioner of Community and Regional Affairs on there. Where he has not been in the past. I guess my question is, why should we be more specific there, or why should we justify expanding the board in there?
You mean expanding the board in the Department of Community and Regional Affairs, or under the public corporation?